Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm your host, Jonathan Canary. Lee is driving to Halifax right now to go do his wilderness first aid. It is last call for submissions for the Across the Highlands. So if you want to get on a big old winter adventure, contact Lee and jump on board. I think there's one or two slots left. And yeah, like we mentioned before in other episodes, definitely the trip of a lifetime. So also for our listeners who are in Ontario, we will be at the Adventure Outdoors Expo that is taking place on February 24th weekend. And we'll have a little bit more information on that as it draws closer to the convention. First up for this week's Misadventures, we have Jamie LaRuzic.
Hey, my name is Jamie LaRuzic. I'm from Sydney. And this story takes place on Cape Breton Island. Late last May, me and your co-host, Jonathan Canary, decided to plan a two-day kayak trip, paddling across Lake Uist with a short portage into Loch Lomond Lake and making our way down Grand River. We started out on a Saturday. We dropped the kayaks off at the put-in. We brought my truck to where we believed the trip would end, and then went in Jonathan's rig back to the start. Beautiful sunny day, nice and warm, loaded up the boats, and we started our way across Lake Uist. Everything was going great. I was paddling behind John, and all of a sudden I heard him hollering like, "Jamie, there's kind of a lot of water in my boat." So as I got to paddling up close to him, I could see that the tail end of the kayak was kind of below the waterline. And he's starting to panic a bit, so I'm like telling him, "John, you better start paddling." So he starts pretty much giving her as his boat continues to fill up. He's probably 500 or so feet from shore, and he's paddling like, you know, the Roadrunner's trying to get away from Wile E. Coyote. And I pull up next to him, and he's like, here, take this. And I think he's going to pass me his cell phone to keep it from getting wet if the boat goes down. And here, all he's worried about, not the gear, not his phone, not the tent, not his food, he hands me his vape. And that's all he was worried about saving. Anyways, he got very close to shore. The boat took on a lot of water and ended up pretty much underwater. But we got him to shore and got everything dried out. And what ended up happening was I had forgot to put the deck-mounted drain plug in. And every once in a while, a little bit of water would fill in the drain hole. And eventually, it just filled the boat up more and more. And once the tail end went underwater, that was it. But the rest of the trip went off without a hook. It was a great time. We both enjoyed ourselves, I think. But that's pretty much the story of when Jonathan Canary sunk the boat.
Oh, my God. That was actually one of my favorite all-time summer trips. When Jamie asked me to go on that, I really hadn't been on a lot of paddling adventures. We did the tent dwellers, and that was kind of really it. Yeah, and we paddled across Lake Uist, Loch Lomond, and down Grand River, camped at the falls. Yeah, it was just a beautiful time. We were toast after that one. My arms from paddling that boat with all the water in it, I have felt like my arms were going to absolutely fall off me. So, and Jamie was I think if Jamie wasn't there, I would have just jumped out of the boat and swam to shore and just left all my shit sink to the bottom of the lock. But he was a good coach to get me to paddle to shore. He was yelling at me the whole time. So thanks for that, Jamie. And I think we'll just dive right into the episode. You guys are going to really love this one. Yeah, let's just jump into it. So who do we have here with us today? Why don't we go around and introduce ourselves, and why don't you give us our name and something about yourself?
My name's Mike Morrison. I'm a teacher. Like to do a lot of hiking and outdoor stuff, and yeah, that's about it.
My name's Tim Pushlow. I'm a stevedore, and I pretty much like anything outdoors.
And I'm Jody McLean. I'm married to Mike Morrison, also a teacher, and also like outside stuff.
I'm Dave Fraser. I'm also a teacher, and I do a lot of outdoor stuff.
No relation to my dad, David Fraser.
I don't think so.
No. And not you, David Fraser.
Oh, yeah, not me, David Fraser. Yeah.
David, you spent some time up in the Arctic?
Yeah, a few years.
Yeah, tell us about that.
We went up in 1999, my family and I. We stayed there for 5 years. I was a teacher at a big high school. Lots of outdoor opportunities there. Did lots of hiking and hunting and canoeing and stuff like that. It was good.
Cool. What's everybody else's experience with the outdoors?
I enjoy pretty much, like I say, anything. This time of year, I'm enjoying a little bit of fat biking. The conditions have been phenomenal for that stuff. Mm-hmm. If we had the snow, do some snowshoeing. Do a little bit of hunting, kayaking, hiking, running, anything outside, pretty much.
Yeah, I'd be similar. Just kind of generalist outdoor activities. Lots of hiking, kayaking and canoeing in the summer, mountain biking, trail running. I've been doing a lot of fly fishing in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Pretty much anything that gets me out the door and. Yeah, just enjoy pretty much all aspects of it.
Jody?
Yeah, kind of the same. I've enjoyed being outside since I was a kid and kind of tag along whenever anybody's going.
Do you guys go on a lot of big trips together?
The four of us?
Yeah.
We actually have gone on a couple trips together.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Do you mean the four of us or?
Yeah, the four of you. well, so to explain why is that, you know, we met you when you were, Mike and Jody and I have known each other for a while, but we kind of met you as a team throughout your adventure in the summer, which we'll get into.
True.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why. So to give a little bit more of context, we had, if you've been listening to this podcast, we've been doing all these misadventure stories and fun stories and all that sort of stuff. And this was one that came out of last summer that I really wanted to save for an actual episode of podcast and talk about it. Cause there's quite the story behind it. And this was like mid July or something like that. And that's how we met everybody here. So why don't we just jump right into it? Let's get into the story.
Let's do it.
Sure. So, we did a rafting trip. The plan had been very similar to what you guys had done and guided a few times from the headwaters of the Margaree all the way down to the bottom of the river. That area of the Margaree has been kind of something I've thought about and dreamt about and wanted to explore, like really since I was a kid. And in fact, I've actually gone as far as mapping out just through Google Maps and Google Earth and looking at different maps, you know, hikes, basically hiking trips up there, and had never done it, but was kind of hoping within the last couple of years I would have done some exploring up there. And then when I saw you guys were doing trips from the very top of the river, it kind of really, you know, set off something in my head that, you know, oh, wow, this is probably a better way to do it than to do all that bushwhacking all the way in to the top of the river. And that's kind of what put it on my radar to do this as a trip.
Yeah, it was something that was on my list, right? Since a kid, I've spent my time going up and down that river, mostly just from big interval down, right? And paddling and canoeing and whatever, right? And then, when I was later, I started hiking up to Second Forks Falls, and then we kept going up. We heard about this waterfalls, ended up at Rocky Brook, and that was like a whole day's hike up, and you camp at, it's kind of like the first rapid around the corner from Rocky Brook, and there's a big rock face and a monster pool. That's kind of where, you know, we would camp, and then we'd hike up and try to go in. And we never were able to get to the falls because it's a little bit more difficult to hike up the river rather than go up over the mountain. But yeah, we put together the trip, and then that was, there was a no, I guess in the whole plan, there wasn't a real plan of like actually doing it as like a, like, an organized kind of thing, right? And offering it to anybody. It was more or less just like, I wanted to do it. We're on the Highlands sitting around. I think it was like, wasn't it Seawall? Winter Seawall? We started talking about it. Or it was the Horseshoe.
The Horseshoe Loop.
The Horseshoe Loop, yeah. So we just started talking about different things I wanted to do. And then everybody spoke up and they're like, yeah, I'd do that. And then we just kind of put together a crew and ended up doing it. And did it in early June. And water was a bit higher, but it was also like, out of like the six of us that went, it was like two people with canoe experience. So It was quite the adventure.
We also talked about, like, on our trip, we talked about the fact that you guys did it with canoes and a stand-up paddleboard, and we were like thinking that's just, especially the canoes, like, that's just nuts, because when we went, there wasn't much water in a lot of spots, so it would have been pretty tough, I would think, in canoes.
Yeah, so to give an overview of this whole trip for people that are listening, it's like I forget, it's like 80 kilometers or something, isn't it, somewhere around there, 70-80 kilometers? Do you guys map it?
When I mapped it, it's I guess depending on where you start, but I think it maps out to about 60 all the way to the harbor. Okay. Maybe a little more. No,
yeah, we went up quite a bit higher.
You were higher than we were. So,
and it was early June.
I know we covered pretty much exactly 50 kilometers, but we did miss. We didn't go right to the harbor, and we did miss the top 12 or 15K as well.
So basically it was you that talked everybody else into it, eh?
It didn't take a whole lot of convincing, really. I just, I wanted to do it and mentioned it to Jody, who was on board right away. And I thought maybe the two of us would do it. And then, Jody's sister and her husband, we spend a lot of time doing trips with them as well, hiking and various things. And so, we asked them if they wanted to do it and they were on board, and then asked these guys if they were interested. I think I might ask a couple other people, and this was the group of six of us that ended up doing it.
Yeah, so I got the message from Mike there, hey, interested in doing this Margaree trip. And I guess if you want to call it that, what is it, type 2 fun?
I was probably pushing type 3 at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I mean, everybody enjoys a little something like that now and then. Well, not everybody, I guess, but some people. So I jumped at the opportunity right away. I was like, yeah, for sure, man. Thanks for the invite. And then I found out Dave was on board. And we did do a trip before me, Dave, and Mike. We done a winter trip, eh?
Yeah, yeah. That was just before COVID.
Yeah. So, and then getting back to what you said about doing trips before. Afterwards, me and Jody and Dave and a few other people, we, I don't know, it might have been the same group, eh? We done the Gull Cove?
Gull Cove, that was the four of us plus Dave's wife, Danette, Mike and Janelle came with us on
so
that.
So anyway, but yeah, when Mike messaged me about that Marguerite trip, I was on board.
Yeah, it was just like, I mean, we had like such a dry summer and lead up to then, from what I remember. Ideally, now looking back on it and like looking, I've been paying attention to like looking at historical records for the Marguerite, and like the optimal time is like May, early June, because the water levels are up like almost a meter higher than what they are when you guys went and did it.
Yeah.
You could probably stay in the raft almost the whole time.
Yeah, well, that much listen, we like 2 weeks before you guys went, it rained. We had that big dump of rain or something in the end of June. And I went up to Rocky Brook with Alec, and we had no problem. We went up to get like a double inflatable kayak that was left in the woods by Rocky Brook. And it must have been there for, I mean, you're talking like at least a couple of years. And then we hiked over the mountain at Rocky Brook Falls, and then down over the mountain, and then in, and then paddled down to it, deflated it, and strapped it to the front of the boat. And then I went around the corner and capsized the boat, and it was literally sticking nose down, straight up, floating down the river. And I was like running down the bank to try to get it. But yeah, I mean, it was a decent rip.
So, tell us about the trip.
Somebody else want to start? You want me to start?
He just doesn't want to admit he got us a little bit lost.
Mistakes were made early on.
Made early in the journey.
We were never lost. Let me be clear, we were never lost.
We did have a real rough put in, shall we say. We had way more gear than we needed, and we were not prepared to carry it as far as we did. We were thinking it was like a quick little hop, skip, and a jump through the woods, and it was not. It was a real rough day. Yeah. It was great, but it was a tough slog getting down to the water.
How long did it take to get to the river?
Ooh,
5 hours.
4 or 5 hours. Wow. Yeah, we thought maybe like 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
So we were packed really poorly.
Yeah, we weren't packed for carrying gear. So we had like a bunch of loose stuff. And yeah, we ended up kind of like bucket brigading it through underbrush. And it was a tough day, but we got to the water. We got on the water. Went for a little paddle, found a nice spot to tuck in for the night, and we were really pleased with ourselves because we had a tough time, but we got through it, and we were all feeling pretty pleased with ourselves.
Were you guys? You guys must have been beat. when you got back to when you got to camp?
Yeah, we're pretty tired.
Yeah,
Jody was suffering from blood loss as well because I've never seen
oh
somebody
my gosh,
be
there's
so
many bugs
eaten by black flies.
Really?
Never in my life. No, no. And we've been in some intense mosquito situations, and the black flies that day were.
Yeah, it was like Quebec level black flies.
Okay, for people listening, we got you guys hooked up with a bunch of pack rafts. We'll set that up. So it wasn't canoes, it was pack rafts, which you guys probably never used before.
We had never
right?
used before.
Yeah. And the reason why we got these pack rafts was because of we did it in the canoes, right? And after that trip, I was like, yeah, that is not the
and
tool.
It fucking
tool for that job. Sucks. That's not the tool for that job. And because it's so tight and rocky and all that sort of stuff, right? So a friend of mine had reached out and he goes, listen, you guys should be using these things. And he sent me a picture. And I'm like, what is that? And he goes, oh, these are pack rafts. I'm like, what is a pack raft? So I started Googling it and found a bunch of companies that did more research. And I go, oh, yeah, these things are like, this is what you need for accessing a lot of those areas up in the Highlands. So then we ordered them and ran some stuff last spring with them, and I got more on order this year. And like Denise done, you guys had a couple of Denise, the rattle rafts. His like, they were first, I think the first versions of his pack rafts, which all have like spray decks and stuff. So all the new ones I have all have the zipper on the back. So these are basically inflatable kayaks, and some of them, if you're doing ones for trips, have a zipper on it that you can store things in the pontoon, and then you have a spray deck, and so you can get into some nice white water, and so best for applying for stuff like that. But it's a, you know, you guys came to my place, and I remember you guys showing up, right? And I'm just like, okay, I think I messaged you beforehand, and I was like, just pack light. I was like, okay, pack light, because there's not a lot of room in these things. And then you guys showed up, and you were like pulling out 70-liter bags and like cases of beer. I'm like packing to go on like a canoe trip at Kedji. I'm like, okay, yeah, you get a pack down from this.
So Lee drove you guys up in the woods?
Yep.
And dropped you off at about what time?
What was it? 10?
Close to noon or something? Yeah.
Okay. And so I had missed you guys when I got up there that day. So I didn't come up until probably noon. And just like sat around all day and hung out. We went for ice cream and whatever. And then we started with the meat party. We dove into the meat. So there's two timelines here. There's pack rafting, meat party. So these two timelines are going to collide, I promise.
I mean, in hindsight, I probably could have brought you some brisket, you know, if we'd have thought of it.
And so, you know, we get all hopped up on the meat, and I get a message. So there's not really any service. It's service is pretty spotty, Marguerite, for those of you who don't know that. And I get a message on Instagram, and this guy says, are you at Live Life Intense? I don't know this guy. And I said, yeah. He's like, do you know Lee Frazier? I said, yeah. What's going on? Well, I'm with the Inverness RCMP, and David Frazier's spot device has gone off, and we are trying to deploy. We have an SOS. I'm like, oh shit. I don't know who that is, but Lee's name is David. I wonder if Lee's Garmin InReach like just like set somebody press some kid pressed the button on it in the shop or something. And I went in and told Lee, and he's like, "Well, I was just talking to Mike Morrison. We were talking through the Garmin, and he's fine." I'm like, "Oh, so David's on his trip?" He's like, "Yeah." Anyways, we were continuing to talk to this RCMP officer. He says that the Shetty Camp search and rescue had passed on your rescue because where you were at was too remote, which is hilarious because you guys hiked hundreds of pounds of gear through that, and these guys can't even hike in. And yeah, so that started off our adventure for the night.
Oh yeah, I remember seeing the message, and I'm like, this is a guy hitting on you, Canary. That's what's happening right now. I'm like, this is just something, because it was a really weird the sort of message was hey or something, something, something. And then I walked away, and then he just goes, yeah, you're going to have to read this. We call him, and I go, what? So what's going on? And he's like, yeah, so Shady Camp, search and rescue, can't get into them. So we're mobilizing the helicopter from Greenwood. I'm like, what? You're sending the military here? And they're like, yeah, 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 we're going to send them up and they're going to stage out of the Marguerite Airport. It's like, what? Like, I just got a text from Mike on my Garmin and he said, at camp, all good. I'm like, what's the time, the timestamp? And it was like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever before your spot pinged. So I go, okay, well, there's a GPS coordinates, right? Right? And he goes, yeah. I'm like, okay, text those to me. So he texts them to me. I pull them up on the laptop. Okay, so the spot, right? On the map, I'm like, we can get to them in like maybe a half hour or an hour and a half. Like, take me an hour to get up there, half hour over the mountain, we can get there. And they're like, you sure? It's like 9 o'clock at night. I'm like, yeah, it'd be a good little mission. Mind you, couple beers in me. And
a whole lot of meat. Yeah.
Well, you know what? We should probably, let's backtrack for a second. So
let's do it.
When we finally got to camp, we knew we hadn't traveled that far on the river. We knew we had a couple hours and then we had to set up camp because it was going to get dark. And it was a struggle to go just a few kilometers on the river. But anyway, we pull in and we decide on a spot we're going to camp. And then we're just kind of getting unpacked. And Dave looks at me and he says,
I said, there's something wrong with my spot. I always carry a spot on trips like this. I've had it for years and never had a problem with it. I like the option that people can see where you're at, you know, and they can kind of track you. So I had it inside the top pocket of my pack,
yep,
tied to the front of the raft. And we didn't go 100 feet the first time. I dumped it. And I guess at that point it got wet. It had gotten wet before without an issue. But anyway, we weren't in the boats that long. But by the time we got to camp, I took it out and I looked at it. And I could see that something had happened to it. Normally there's a light on it. There was no light. So I showed it to Mike and said, something wrong with this thing. So we had a clothesline hooked up. I hung that on the clothesline too, just to see what would happen. And forgot about it.
and meanwhile, we had your inReach. I texted Lee to say, you know, we had a long kind of crazy day, but we're in camp and everything's good. And then I turned the inReach off and put it away. Mm-hmm. Didn't think another thing
went
about
to bed.
It. Well,
save
we
that
hung
battery.
Out.
Yeah,
we didn't go straight to bed. We hung out. We had a fire, a couple beers, some food.
Yeah,
just talked about what a crazy great day we had.
Yeah, we had a good amazing day. We had a great day, yeah, but we were exhausted.
Yeah, for sure.
We were tired.
And so, at the point at which we were hightailing it over the mountain, screaming David Frazier. Well, who heard that?
We all heard. It was like a dream because, yeah, you know, you're in a little tent and you had a rough day and you think you're in the wilderness and I know where all these guys are at. They're sleeping too. And then I hear this strange voice just kind of echoing down over this mountain. Dave Frazier, Dave Frazier. It was surreal.
Just thinking those edibles might have been a little too strong.
Jody, what did you tell me?
I don't remember.
You were like, I thought David was sleepwalking, saying his own name.
I didn't know what was going on.
Like, you're exhausted, and I know, like, I think Tim and I kind of got up and out of the tents first, I think. And at that point, it was apparent that somebody was yelling Dave's name and through the woods, and we kind of tell the direction. And I was so kind of spaced out, I looked at Tim and I said, what do we do? Do we go talk to them? Like, in my mind, it was like, no, hide, turn off the lights, just ignore it, and it will go away. And then, you know, you start to wake up a little bit, and we walked over to the river.
Yeah, yeah. I just remember walking across, and I was, like, trudging through the river, and then I just saw lights. I'm like, okay, we got them. This is the right spot. And then like you guys just were just like, what's going on? And well, I mean, you don't expect to meet anybody up there, right?
That, nope. Lee, Canary, how the fuck did you guys get here?
And you know, honestly, when you guys said that the spot device was going off, I honestly for a minute thought you were joking and that you guys had decided to just bomb up into the woods and just come hang out, sit by the fire, you know, and just spend the night up there. That went through my mind. And for about 5 seconds, I was super pissed off. I was like, okay, this is funny and cool that they're here, but man, did they ever just scare the hell out of me. But then it all sunk in that, you know, you weren't messing around. And obviously, you're not going to come up in the middle of the woods at midnight for a laugh. Or maybe you would.
I just think of, like, if they didn't contact us, and you guys are like all asleep and like super tired, and then you hear above you
and the big spotlight, the whole river lights up. And then the megaphone.
Yeah.
David Frazier.
I don't think it would have been any more shocking than you guys come down off that mountain. It was really? Like, it was, we thought we were, and I guess we were in, you know, wilderness, and then just these voices. And one of you guys were saying to her, I remember it, search and rescue has been notified. And then I, you know, because it was so weird, I thought that you guys were search and rescue. And I said, and I have friends that belong to search and rescue. And I said, man, they don't search at night. Like, what's going on? Why would they be doing this at night? I never thought that you know, that anybody would ever do that.
I had that thought too when, because one of you yelled, your spot device has been activated or something. And before I realized, because, you know, you guys had your headlamps on, so I couldn't see you, I thought, oh, it's, I don't know what happened, but this is search and rescue coming looking for us for some reason. That was my, another thought I had.
So, so we found out you were all right. And then, yeah, we hiked back. You guys were like, so are you guys staying the night? We're like, no, we have to call the police, man. We're going to hike back into here now. Lee had been up. By the time we got to the mountain, Lee had been up for 23 hours. He had been awake for 23 hours because he got up at like 4 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the morning.
That's the first thing he said to us when we got there to get set up. He said, oh, I've been up since four. I've been smoking a brisket.
Yeah. And so when we got to the top of the mountain, it was like the last push before it kind of started to level out for us to get to the truck. And we were like climbing up the branch, like pulling ourselves up, climbing basically. And we like collapsed for a minute, and I just saw Lee's eyes shut, and he just had like a 30-second nap. I'm like, all right, bye, Kenta, we gotta go. We are not living on the side of this mountain today.
We could see you guys. We were watching you guys for quite a while, and then your light would disappear, and then you'd be like seemingly, because you can't see the mountain in the dark. Mm. We could just kind of see the silhouette of trees and your light slowly going up the mountain, and then it would disappear, and then it would appear like, I don't know, looked like a mile ahead, but it was, you know, it was probably 50 meters or something. It was pretty wild.
Yeah, it's I could have slept. I could have had a good night. I would have slept there on the bank.
We got back to the truck, and he jumped in the driver's seat, and I was like, no, I don't think so, buddy. Like, yeah, you're right. We fell asleep in 30 seconds, and yeah. So how was the rest of that trip?
I think we need to talk about after you guys left.
Okay.
Just kind of stormed into camp and you know, dropped this on us. And
in and out in a half hour.
Yeah.
In
and, out, and I really thought you'd be staying the night. And then you're gone. And then we're like, what do we do now?
What
and then we started talking about you guys. And which one of you had Blundstones on? Because that was, I couldn't believe that.
Must have been you.
You come down off probably. That... off that mountain wearing Blundstones.
And jeans.
And jeans. Cross the river.
Well, the two of us were in jeans, back. Yeah.
Oh, we just left straight. I didn't even grab the gear. I just was like, yep, we're going. See it. Boom.
We threw them. We grabbed a bag. We grabbed a sleeping bag.
First aid kit.
First aid kits. And a couple of happy acts. Like a handful. Well, no. We grabbed like maybe 6 or 7 happy acts in case you guys needed food for something. Or yeah. So, but yeah. So we left the camp.
Yeah, then we said, well, what do we do? And we just said, well, we continue on. Whatever's going to happen has happened already. So what? We knew that you guys were going to go out and make a phone call. There's kind of another side to this, too, is that when you have the spot, as you probably know, you have primary contacts. Like that, yeah. In the event that something happens, they call. So I had a mutual friend of ours, Mike Sidney is the guy's name, and as one of my contacts. My wife is the other. Just, I don't know what time it was, probably 8 o'clock at night, the RCMP arrived at my door, and don't be alarmed, but the spot has been activated. So she doesn't know what to do. She's like kind of a little bit excited about the whole thing. She's phoned around. I think she phoned, they told her that Mike was the other contact. So Mike was at a wedding, and he saw, I believe the RCMP number come up on his phone, so he had no idea what it was. So they kind of coordinated, and so they were waiting for a phone call. So I guess when you guys get out, you phone the RCMP, and then it just kind of
and I texted your wife.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I texted Mike through the InReach as well. And we weren't sure if it had gone through or not, but I had let Mike know. But that's 12:30 at that point or something like that, yeah, or 1 AM or something. I can't remember. But
yeah, well, at least like I was always curious about how that whole process worked, that procedure for those. Now we kind of know, right? So it was actually the call center for Spot in California that first called my house, and then the RCMP arrived. That's what it was.
Yeah. You hear different things. So I was watching a YouTube video probably about 2 weeks ago now about a guy that was hiking in some mountain range in northwestern U.S. And so he was hiking in. It was kind of winter, and he ended up pinging his Garmin, his InReach, and the communications back and forth were basically like from rangers were like, you have to get to this trailhead. So he was thinking that he would get like the old helicopter would just come in, pick him up, and then he'd be out of there. But so he was like, it's kind of a video roasting Garmin, be like, well, they made me walk another 10 kilometers to get rescued. I'm like, well, fuck, if you can walk, man, like, why not? Like, it's you know, it was just the situation in the video. I was watching it. I'm like, well, you put yourself in that position and you're able to get out. It has nothing to do with your broken leg, or in the event of that, I would say that it would be a little bit different. But, and so the Margaree River, that's the thing. It's like when they were telling me that the Greenwood, the helicopter was coming down, I'm like, where are they going to get, unless they're like six people? Was it six of you in there?
Six of us, yeah.
Yeah. So six people, like, helicopter rescue, like, how, you know, I mean, you could do it, but is it realistic?
You'd be better off floating us down, like, honestly. Like,
yeah,
if exactly. If somebody got hurt, you'd be better floating down a big interval.
Yeah, but that whole, the whole river, to continue with the story, the rest of the trip. How'd you like the rest of the trip? The rest of the river.
It was great. It was a
trip of a lifetime.
Yeah, it was
we had a great time.
The highlight of the summer as far as trips and stuff go. We had a lot of fun, and it was beautiful country, a lot of fun. The pack rafts are great.
Yeah, speak on the upper river. Like, what is your impressions of the upper Margaree River?
Well, when we first started, I was like, a little more water would be nice. Then we started moving a bit, and then I was like, because our experience wasn't too good in the pack rafts.
Yeah.
So I was quite happy that, like, a lot of spots were, you know, I was happy with the water.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful. It was, the upper river was just beautiful.
You know what's crazy is that since we started doing, like, the last 2 years, I've been up there a lot. And, like, I was a kid. Last time I'd been up, it was 20 years from when we did the canoe trip 3 years ago, 2 years ago. Last time I was up that far was 20 years before that. And I didn't really remember that much. I was in high school. And, but yeah, that upper river, and I think it was the mid 80s. The more guys I talked to, I've been trying to talk to a bunch of old fishing guides and fishermen and stuff that used to fish up there all the time. And like the history up there and them telling stories about all these different pools. And then I'm pulling up my phone and showing them the pool that we're paddling through, like rocky pool. Like big rock face, huge, big, deep pool. And they're just like, their eyes light up and they're like telling me all these crazy stories. One guy was, I think Donald Ingram was telling me the story, but he broke his leg near that pool and they had to hike him up the mountain with a broken femur.
Wow. Oh my God.
And they used to have, he had an old Volvo station wagon with like mud tires on it. And that's how he got back there.
Wow.
And there used to be a cabin at Rocky Brook, log cabin.
Yeah, that's you were telling me about that. That's really cool. There's some really good descriptions in James Gray's book, The Handbook for Margaree, that fly fishing book.
Yeah.
He describes a lot of the pools in the upper river. When the newest edition of that book came out was just shortly after that part of the river had been closed to fishing. So he kind of gives that caveat in the description, but then he goes on to describe all these beautiful pools that they used to be able to hike up. And I can't remember how he describes it, but it takes a right hearty fellow to get up there and you know, work for these fish kind of thing. It was just an interesting perspective on it. Really cool to read.
Yeah. We came down through in, I'm going to say like the end of September. We had gotten some rain right near Blueberry Jam. Summer's around Blueberry Jam in the fall. And I had a couple of friends coming down to go to Blueberry Jam, Dave Green and Mike Parrott, who Mike runs Old Creole in Halifax. And, well, Dave had messaged me first, and I just go, well, river's up. Like, we should go in the upper river, because he's been asking about that for as long as I've known him. And Mike had a GoPro I put on his helmet, and he was dipping it in all the pools. every pool we went through, he'd slam his helmet in the water. And then I have a bunch of videos of like all the trout, like schools and schools and schools of trout up there. And, but yeah, as a fisherman though, coming down through those pools.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
I took my good friend, Jimmy Peterson, who was a guide in Margaree and lives in Chetty Camp. And he was frothing at the mouth.
Yeah. I had a fishing rod with me, but I didn't fish till we got down to tent pool. But yeah, some of those places, and you know they're untouched, and you know they're. I mean, some of those pools, you're looking down, and it's, you know, the perspective's a bit tough from looking down through the water. But some of those pools have to be 20 feet deep.
Oh, easy.
And you're coming out of what's basically like parts of that river, that upper river. It's almost like in a brook in some spots. It's the water so low, and it gets fairly narrow, and then you dump into one of these huge pools. Some of them are, I think one of them is called Long Pool because it's like, I don't know, a couple hundred feet long and just deep, deep, deep rock faces on either side. Just amazing.
Yeah. And it doesn't change as much as the lower river does because of it. It's just all rock, the whole thing. So it doesn't really change. Like the bottom half is fluctuates quite a bit. All that topsoil gets eroded on the bank.
The river kind of has three zones really, like that upper river down as far as Big Interval or maybe to Portree, like... Or no, the upper river, I guess, before you get to Big Interval, where it's narrow and there's lots of drops and there's white water and stuff. And then from, Big Interval Portree down to, say, I don't know, Cranton Bridge or somewhere along there, it's starting to mellow out, but it's still faster moving, still a little bit narrow. And then you get kind of below Cranton and it widens out and, you know, it becomes almost a lazy river. You could just kind of float down most of it. It was really cool to see all the different, how it kind of changes over the course of the distance. And that was one of the things that I always was fascinated by. So like I said, I've been thinking about the upper river since I was a little kid. I spent all my summers in that area as a kid, and I fished the river a lot with my grandfather and some family friends and stuff. And I remember asking a friend of my parents who I used to go fishing with sometimes, I remember asking him one time, like, where the Margaree River comes from. I always pictured, like, as a kid, I pictured some massive lake somewhere like Chetty Camp Flowage or something like that. And the river would dump out of there and it would be, you know, huge and dramatic. And he kind of described it as, well, it doesn't really come from anywhere. It just kind of disappears into the highlands. And I just remember it just blew my mind. Like I don't think so. Like you can't be right. I was like a little kid or whatever. It was like, I couldn't imagine that's how a big river like that started. So really cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did this trip compare to other rivers that y'all have paddled?
Well, Jody and I have done the lower part of the river in canoe. And we did the Southwest River in pack rafts last year as well. That's really the only two. We really haven't done any other river trips, right?
Yeah, same with me, myself. When it comes to rivers, I haven't really done anything at all. Most of my experience with the water is with kayak and maybe the ocean and lakes and stuff like that. But this was my first river trip.
Oh, shit.
Which made it, I think, obviously all that much better.
Yeah.
Because like he was saying, how the river changes, you get used to one section for a bit and then all of a sudden you're in somewhere new. It's like, and then you're looking around, you're like, fuck, this is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. There's it kind of like reignited my, hunger for like finding different places to paddle. So we've been like, I have a list of things that I'm checking off. Like obviously all the ones in the Highlands that I talk about all the time, but recently it's been like River Inhabitants was one that somebody mentioned to me that's down River Denny area.
I just mapped that out the other day.
did you see how squirrely it is?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah. This would be so much fun.
I measured the distance of that maybe last week.
Did you go from the highway down?
I can't remember now, but from where, like the River Denny side, where it comes all the way down to Route 4, where it comes out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was mapping that out. And I spent a lot of time on Google Earth and Google Maps, but there's one spot there where there's in kind of the back road there's one spot where the Google Street View car drove through. So you could drop the camera on one of those bridges and see what the river looks like there. So, and it's actually fair. It looks like it draws a fair bit of water there.
Yeah, it's that one's one, and then Grand River.
Anyway, let me know. Sign me up.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like this winter that we're having right now is like perfect. Like I did the Southwest last week, and that was so much fun. Like the Lake Ainslie down, because it gets real squirrely there, and by all those tight knit Gaspro traps before you get to where you guys put in at Scottsville, that just like 4 kilometers. It's fast and squirrely and down trees and all kinds of shit. So it's pretty fun.
What about you guys? How did this trip compare to other trips that you've been on?
For me, the first time in a pack raft, that was a different experience. I think no matter what river you're on, it would be different in a pack raft just because it's different a craft. But I don't know. I haven't done a lot of river trips like this in around here. I did some big trips when I lived in Northwest Territories, but they were in it was canoes, freighter canoes and stuff. And it's a different country, but
like bigger rivers.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them were pretty small. A lot of portages.
Oh yeah,
significant portages, 5-6 kilometers.
Wow, crazy.
With freighter canoes, the big clipper canoes are, yeah, I think they're 22 feet. But we, it was big parties. It was a different type of trip, but
and with students, right? Is that right?
Yeah,
students usually.
Yeah, always high school students.
And do you run an outdoor program for high school students up north?
I was the school I was at was a Dene school. It was it still is. It's the biggest Dene school in Northwest Territories, and they had a real strong culture program there. So I kind of coordinated the logistical end of it, and then we had people from the community that were actually doing the skills and leading the trips. So I did lots of trips with that. It was good. It was a completely different experience than what I would get anywhere else. But that's part of my experience, I guess.
Oh man, wild! It's on my list to get up there, but I'm still knocking off the list in Cape Breton. So. Yeah, big 20 something.
They're 20 feet. Yeah,
double person portage.
Yes.
Yeah. I would say.
Well, the canoes would hold 6 people, two sitting side by side, like two and two, a guy in the bow and then someone in the back steering.
Yeah.
And then we'd have a mountain of gear. The one trip we made, we left the town where we lived and we, which was below the tree line, and we, paddled to the Bearlands. It was a hunting trip. It was neat in a lot of ways. The whole trip was like 26 days. There was 30 of us there, 17 students and 13 people in the community. But one of the people there was a CBC videographer. That's how you say it?
Yeah.
Videograph.
Yeah.
And they made a documentary about the trip, but it's a long story. About 10 days in, we ran out of food.
Somebody was getting into the reserves.
Well, no one had done this particular trip, and we had a bunch of high school kids with us, and there were some miscalculations, we'll say, and we literally ran out of food. We went the adults, teachers and elders, that we
eat
went
each
all,
other.
That would have happened on the. We went 3 days without food, so we had a satellite phone with us, and there were some. You know, we didn't want to rely on getting help, and so finally we did make the call. We called back to Yellowknife, an outfitter there, and said, you know, we got an emergency. This is what's going on, and they said we can't help you. And we said, no, you don't realize this is an emergency. We need help right away. We need food shipment dropped off with a bush plane, and they said, you don't understand. We can't help you. And I said, I didn't say, but the principal said. This is an emergency, and I remember them saying quite clearly that you guys don't understand that the World Trade Center has just been bombed, the Pentagon has just been bombed, and then the phone went dead. So we were 10 days out with no food, and as far as we knew, the world was over. So it made for some interesting paddle the next few days till we eventually got to where we had to be.
Wow. Crazy. Did you end up getting like fishing or doing anything like that for food?
Well, yeah, we had a fishnet with us and we had rifles and everything, but it, as is the case with caribou, like if they just shift their migration a mile or two, you don't run, there's thousands of them. We never saw anything. I think it was 2 days after, no, a day after that, we ended up getting a moose, and that kind of saved us. And then a day after that, we got into camp, and that's when we found out what had happened. And But it was a pretty interesting experience.
Wow. That's, I feel like there was, there would be like a Lord of the Flies type scene. When you get that moose, it's just like you paint yourself in blood and somebody's, you know, fire's going.
It was pretty close to that. Yeah.
That would have been that. I mean, I probably would enjoy the lead up, but that having that experience happen where you're in that environment, nobody's coming to get you and you end up kind of figuring it out by, you know, obviously getting a moose, but that's just something you'd see in like a movie, right?
It was the I forgot the guy's name, the reporter that was there. He worked for CBC. He was Indian, had grown up in India, really well spoken, very educated guy. And we had no idea what had happened. Like, you know, who would have bombed the World Trade Center and what could be happening? And so I had all these high school boys who were really not interested in school or politics or anything like that. And so it was kind of emotional, but he eventually said, I think I know what happened. And he was really well versed in world politics. And he said, I think that Osama bin Laden is responsible for this. And Al Qaeda, and I hadn't heard of Al Qaeda before that, right? And he nailed it. When we got to, eventually got out and read the newspapers and stuff, everything he had said. But those high school kids were suddenly very interested in global politics, and they had no interest prior to that. But yeah. It was affecting, you know, it was affecting us big time at that point because we were going hungry.
So
you starved them into liking politics.
So, you know, a couple of days. So when we linked up with you guys in the Marguerite, you and I and Lee took a picture.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I posted that on Facebook and we had a little laugh and whatever. And so it's a couple of days later, my friend Danielle sends me this photo of me and you and Lee and with a bunch of question marks. And I guess I like just woke up or something. I thought I sent it to her and she was giving me question marks and right. Like, what is this? You know? And I said, oh man, I'm sorry. I think I sent that to the wrong person. She's like, no, I sent it to you, you idiot. What? Explain this photo. And I said, oh, you know, we went up, we did this thing, blah, 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 blah. She's like, yeah, that's my dad. And I remember her she would tell me stories about you, David, about how much of an outdoors person you were and leading these trips for schools and living up north and being a hunting guide and so on and so forth. And yeah, so it's just like, it was just like, it brought things together where it's just such a small world, yeah. You know? Anyway.
Well, that was part of it. After you guys left that night, we're standing around and I had heard her mention your name and, you know, Canary is not a very common name. And I said, that's ringing a bell. Word. And then I think I said to you, Mike, I said, I think that's one of my daughter's friends. And I just kind of, yeah. So as soon as we get out to cell service, I text her and that's what we made the connection.
It's so funny. Yeah.
But it was, we've talked about it before and we joke about it, but that the Dave Fraser echoing through the mountains, it was, you know, it's kind of funny. We've joked about it, but I haven't told you guys this, but I was hunting there a few weeks ago with a buddy of mine from Iona.
Yep.
And I had told him the story about this. He's quite into the outdoors. And he said, you're not going to believe this. And I said, what? He said, a couple months ago, I went to a party in Marguerite. And he said, I walked in the door and I hear this guy go, Dave Fraser, the same as you said. And here you were, Canary, you were telling the story.
Oh, this oh my God. who is your buddy? You don't have to say his name. Okay. It's okay.
Yeah,
yeah, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah.
It's a small world. Cape Breton's a small world.
It's such a small world.
So I'll ask the cliche question. What's the next trip you guys are planning after this? You got one in the works?
We've been talking about Seawall, like us as a group. So I think that's, I think
Seawall would be,
we'll sign up right now. I think we're going to maybe try to commit to that really early summer.
I'll give you a route.
I heard, the podcast last week and you talked about, that you found out a way to avoid that clusterfuck of spruce trees that most people crawl through.
Yeah.
I want that
we want that map.
So there's I went through those trees too, so let's yeah, set it straight. We don't mind avoiding them. We were down with our crawling with like pushing the bags ahead of us, like crawling on hands and knees underneath this stuff on the coast, just go inland a little bit. But yeah, the route that we take, and I got to go scout this because I think I found a game trail to make it a little better. So when you're going into Pollitt's Cove Trail, the actual seawall route goes up. Before you get to Pollitt's Cove, it goes up the mountains, ride these spines kind of like back towards Foxback and North Mountain, and then loops around the cove and then down. And it's pretty much like, I'm talking, when you hit these moose trails, like these game trails, they're literally like the Pollitt's Cove Trail. They're that well-defined. It's just like you can see kind of moose tracks.
Little moose highway.
And you just look on the topo and you're like, well, there's a ridge right here. They're all leaning towards that. And they all congregate, and then it's like a highway, just like down the spine and around. There's a couple of spots that there's nothing, but I mean, it's all big hardwood stands. Yeah. So you kind of pretty much... The actual seawall route that they had proposed, that's supposed to go in and flag it this year, I think. And it kind of rides in the valley behind Pollitt's Cove, and you're in the hardwood stand way behind the farm and the old homestead and then up the mountain and all that sort of stuff.
Just saying, I really enjoyed our winter version of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was super nice to go do that in March. The weather was perfect.
Yeah. And, I'm interested in doing some trips like that as well, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The seawall thing has been on my radar for sure for a few years, and I hope this development happens. I'm pretty excited about it, but I want to do the trip before it happens. I want to do it before and after it happens. Yeah. I'd love to do a hut-to-hut trip through that area, but I really would like to do it before that becomes an option too.
But what's cool about that area is there's so many different routes to take, like so many different things to go through there. So everybody always wants to do Pollitt's Cove. It's great. It's good as like the standalone. It's awesome. I've been going there every year since I was like 5 years old. I've been there every year. But like being able to have all these different areas and points to hit and different difficulty levels where you can just like, I mean, in the first 2 days you're on that. So we go south. So Pleasant Bay or Pollitt's Cove Trailhead to Meat Cove, south to north. And on our guided trips. And being able to, like the first 2 days, if you want to dip to Pollitt's Cove, you just go 3 kilometers to the coast and ride the brook down or river down or whatever. But like from there, going up the river systems, like one that goes back to north and Big Interval area, and then the other one that goes up Gray's Hollow, that's been one I wanted to do. So you kind of go up the river and then you come up Gray's Hollow, which is in the Aspie Bay, like Cape North.
Yeah, I've been looking at that route too. A friend of mine who lives up in that area, one of the guys I hiked across, we did that summer trip across the Highlands a few years ago. He's been back in that area quite a bit. He was telling me about that Gray's Hollow kind of route in.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's gone all the way into Pollitt's that way, but he's definitely been through that kind of.
It's been on, area. Like, I've never done it. I was supposed to do it 3 or 4 different times. And every time something came up and I had to bow out of it. But that is on the list. But it's. Because you could like literally go to the hostel. Well, this is a good idea. Go to the hostel, get Bryson to shuttle you up in his limo, right? Get dropped off at Meat Cove in the old limo, hike around, and then loop right back and end up at the hostel. You just come out in Cape North, good to go.
Just like that, no problem.
That's it.
Yeah.
Like 60K, you know.
Pretty much a straight line.
12,000 feet of elevation, you know. That's the way she goes. The winter stuff, we're doing the winter thing in on the 10th. I think that we leave the 11th. We're going to the hostel and we might even do that loop. The route hasn't been set yet, but we're going to do the main seawall route. Like there's some key points on that system that you want to hit, right? So there's like Seawall Mountain, what everybody calls the peak between Lower and Upper Delaney's Brook, just that big rock ledge and you're on top of it and it's wild up there. The views are crazy. And then like it's south of Lowland Cove. There's like a... Some people ride up in this hardwood stand and then down into Lowland Cove, but there's a big kind of rock face. And if you climb up on that, you get some crazy views up the coast. And then obviously the Blair River and Ball Mountain when you're in Pollitt's Cove, that area. Yeah, that's crazy. It's wild. But everybody that I show pictures from that trip, and they're like, oh, where in Western Canada is that? I'm like, dude, that's like 2 hours north.
Yeah, it's amazing. Some of the videos are just... incredible. Like you said, it doesn't look like Cape Breton landscape, you know.
Here's an idea. This is what I'm gonna do in the spring though. Go North Mountain, skiing off North Mountain down the Pollitt's Cove, paddle out the pack raft, then hike out.
There you go.
Join me on that one.
Yeah.
I'll shuttle you up there. So I think that wraps it up. Just want to thank all you guys for getting together today and having a chat with us. I think there's like
a lot of experience sitting at this table right now, and it was really a delight to have this conversation with you all.
Awesome. Thank
you. Good to talk to you guys.
That's great. And thanks. Listen, thanks for making that trip in the middle of the night into the woods.
Oh, buddy.
Potentially saving us 10 grand in fines. Oh, or whatever.
Yeah, let's talk on that. This is what the thing that I wanted to mention before I ever forgot.
You got a free spot device.
Yeah. When I got back, I said, I'm going to call them and tell them what happened because, you know, I don't think we would have, I guess we could have got charged for something. But so I called their number in the States, and this has happened before. they instantly put me in touch with someone who deals with this, and they were very apologetic and didn't really accept any responsibility, but said that they were willing to replace my spot with a new one. So I got a brand new one in the mail a week later, a new updated one. I haven't even turned it on yet, but
I thought you sold on Facebook.
I gave the old one to Mike.
Dave told me when he made that phone call and they put you through to the other department, you told me that it sounded like they were reading from a script.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
they were expecting this phone call. Like, they've gotten it many times before.
I would be curious. My last thing I want to say, I want to be curious that what happened. So if you would have got fined, so say if it was like a $10,000 bill, right, or whatever it was, if it was anything, would they have, do you think they would have comped the expense?
I doubt it.
I don't think they would have.
No. I doubt it.
As I said, Mike said there, like I told them, they were reading from a script. And I think that based on my responses, you know, that they would go a different way. And if I had said anything about, you know, legal, I'm sure then they would have bounced me to a lawyer or something like that. I don't think they were, they didn't admit any guilt. They just said that sometimes things happen that they can't control. Mm-hmm. And that's where they left it.
Yeah. I've had that Garmin that I had literally like submerged in water for ever, like upside down, sideways. Like, I mean, maybe one of these days it'll finally, I'll be on Seawall Mountain and there'll be a helicopter.
Be a helicopter coming in, yeah.
And Bryson will jump into the helicopter. It's going to blow! Little reference to an old podcast. But anyways, that's it, man. Yeah, awesome.
Thanks for coming in.
All right.
Thank you.